Hey, Bob WP here, and welcome to Woo Dev Chat, a Do the Woo podcast show. Woo! Woo! This show is brought to you by Avalara, who wants to help developers make sure their Woo projects are tax compliant and done right with Avalara's API. I'll tell you more about Avalara later in the show, but let's dive into today's Woo Dev Chat.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Woo Dev Chat. I am here with Carl Alexander as usual. And Carl, I see Carl Board peeking over your shoulder there. How are the two of you doing?
Always creeping out.
Right.
I mean, he's doing what he needs to do, creep out people on Zoom calls and also scare children at birthday parties. You know, that's his retirement life, you know?
I am coming up on an interesting milestone. I believe the first time that we met was at a WordCamp Minneapolis, and it's just around the corner again.
That's good that you remember, because most of my interactions with people is like, I don't remember the first time I met you. I don't remember not knowing you, basically, you know, the kind of thing, you know?
We have.
Because we crossed paths so many times, and I was like, but I don't know when it was I just don't know when it was the first time. Like, I think my most vivid memory of like, okay, like, I really know this person was like, and we'd met a few times already, was at Pressnomic.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, you were sitting in the lobby talking to someone. I don't know who, but you were sitting in the hotel lobby having a chat with someone, and I just remember, I don't know, that's like my most vivid memory of like, okay, this is Zach, you know?
I think my most vivid memory was in one of the after parties. We were in a large venue, and it was you, me, Michelle Schulp, and a few other people.
Yeah, I think most people's most vivid memories of me are after parties.
I was gonna say the same.
Like, if you ask Robert Jacoby, like, that's all he talks about. He's like,
right. And I have to correct myself. It's Michelle Schulp Hunt now. Congratulations, Michelle.
Oh yeah, Schulp Hunt. Yes. But yeah.
Yeah. So, WordCamp Minneapolis is right around the corner. It's coming up on August 16th. I will be there. It's at the Mall of America this year. So if you're listening to this episode and you are anywhere near Minneapolis, St. Paul, please come join us. Go to minneapolis.wordcamp.org/2024. And I would love to see some of you there. Maybe we can have an on-site dev chat with some of the people. So yeah, I'm looking forward to going.
Exciting.
Yeah, it'll be a good time. And then right around the corner after that is WordCamp US in Portland. So
yeah, so that I'll be there for.
I will definitely be there as well. And it's going to be, I think, a really good camp from everything that I'm seeing. Venue looks cool. Everything looks like it's going to be a good time.
Is it going to be Portland weird?
I think so. And I think that you may have just introduced yourself. So, for anybody who is wondering what the third voice there is, that is Ash Shaw. And Ash, why don't you give us a little bit of an introduction of yourself?
Hi, I'm Ash. Yeah, I'm 43 now. I started my career in tech back in 99 when Microsoft was trying to find cheap labor. So they came up with MCSE. I quickly learned that that wasn't really that much fun. And we've got a great Linux community in Cape Town called CLUG, Cape Linux User Group. And I discovered them through a friend. And a few people in the group showed me some tricks and fell in love with open source. More specifically, open source in the broader term. I got a sysadmin job at a university, moved on from that to starting Lightspeed development, which I shortened to Lightspeed, back in 2003 is when I started that. We moved to working with WordPress in about 2007, The inspiration came from something called Barcamp Cape Town. They were kind of informal community organized events, not about specific tech, but about tech in general. And I met a very interesting person back then, Jeremy Thurgood, who was working on Amazon's cloud infrastructure way back then. On, I just remember he had this bizarre device attached to his laptop that was a security device. So anything in and out of his laptop was encrypted. it was back then, it was a brick of a laptop with this giant device attached. Very bizarre.
That's crazy. I'd never heard of that, but that sounds like really...
I'd never seen that again.
Yeah. It's like crazy. And I did some work with law firms, so they were like pretty security conscious, but like the best we had was like, you know, the original RSA 2FAs and...
Yeah, to be honest, I don't remember what it was exactly. I just remember he said it was to encrypt the data and anything going in and out of his laptop. I met another chap who introduced me to WordPress and blogging. And I realized that there was a whole community behind it. And communities are what have always intrigued me. And I'm a social person. So I started getting involved in trying to find more events. And then one of the first 10 WordCamps happened in Cape Town. Matt Mullenweg attended. It was back in 2008. It was what sparked a serious round of inspiration and drive to actually learn more. My lead developer, who's still with my company, joined us back in, I think it was December 2006. So that was a long time ago. We've had an interesting journey through the different versions of WordPress, and we built for a political party, the Democratic Alliance, we built a multi-site blogging network on an initially alpha of BuddyPress. We've never done that again.
I wonder why.
It was the first, my lead developer said, never again. If I'm going to continue working...
It's so funny. One of my first projects too, an agency with WordPress, was like around BuddyPress. And I was like, and what was the forum one too? Like the one that turned into the...
BB Press.
Oh, the forum BB Press.
It was BB Press? Okay, yeah. I was like, no. Never again. Like,
no, they didn't integrate properly.
But it's just, it made it so complex.
Yeah.
It's gotten better now, but it is still complex.
I think Andy Pietling, who originally worked on it, I'm not sure if he's still involved, but I know JJJ.
He's not. He's at Automattic. But I met Andy Pietling when we were using BuddyPress, because I used BuddyPress as my initial way of structuring complex code in like large code bases in WordPress, because that was the only large code base I was aware of.
Right.
Of it. So he came to WordCamp Montreal, and I remember talking with him and just saying like, thank you. Cause like, I would have no idea how to structure this code. Like, it's just like, we were doing really large projects, and I'm like, how do people do this? It's like, this is insane. And then the only example we had was BuddyPress.
So the BuddyPress was quite interesting. I worked with it for quite a while. And then my passion for the community and all of that drove me to organize a couple of WordCamps in Cape Town. Then I handed over to the community, and 2014, I remember, was the last WordCamp San Francisco. And I managed to get in to join the WordPress Summit, where we kind of mapped out the next year of the roadmap. It was really fascinating. And somebody at WooThemes, I was complaining to them about Canvas theme and how they kept making changes and it kept breaking all of our sites, CSS classes changing and this and that. And it was a nightmare. And he said, well, if you have a problem with it, build your own. And I thought to myself, good idea. And we based it on underscores of, initially, and that classic theme, we were stuck with Bootstrap 3 until, well, it's still got Bootstrap 3. We didn't know how to change that. And then last year we built, the previous theme is LSX, the classic theme. And then last year we built LSX Design, which was a block-based theme. And that meant we almost had to relearn everything. I took a bit of a sabbatical in 2020 to 2021, a one-year sabbatical. And when I came back in 2022, I started researching things again. And I was like, what is happening? Everything's changed. And Carolina Nymark at the WordCamp Porto event, she's a really wonderful lady, and she inspired me to go down that rabbit hole. And you guys mentioned ADHD. Well, I'm in the same boat, and I went deep. And it's been a great journey, I must say, figuring out where to take this product, learning all new skills. My team have been on board, and we've had a blast.
I think that's why a lot of people with ADHD like to be like solopreneurs or like start their own thing and stuff, because a lot of ADHD people that I know also are just like love learning.
Yeah.
You know, they love learning new stuff because you get a nice dopamine hit whenever you like skill up at things. So what's the easiest way to skill up at is to just do a whole bunch of things, which business requires you to do.
It's been a journey I've gone through multiple times, right? I've talked about this on the show before, but I was a Flash developer, and I don't know if you're aware, but that kind of disappeared overnight. Yeah, so we definitely ended up having to retool a whole bunch of us into new technologies, and that's how I ended up finding WordPress, was, you know, as part of that retooling. I actually learned UX and went through a whole bunch of UX courses during that time too, and my first job after Flash was in a role as a UX architect. So stepped away from development for a little while and broadened my horizons a bit and learned some design, learned some other things around what makes good user experience. And then came back to, you know, development and WordPress basically full bore after that. And the gateway to me really getting involved with WordPress was WooCommerce. And that's why I'm here. So, that whole learning new things, it's something that we are remarkably good at when it's something we find interest in. The problem is, if we don't find interest in it, it's very hard for us to then focus and work on it, right? So, at least I find that for myself, right? If I'm not interested.
Yeah, I've had the luck that I'm pretty good at delayed gratification. Mm-hmm. So that really helps, I think, for that, because, yeah, it's really easy. I know a lot of people that are like, oh, and they're like, shifting to a new thing right away. And it's hard to stay focused and do the consistent work that is required to get good at anything, really.
The WooCommerce software got launched at WordCamp Cape Town 2012, and that was one of the events I organized. And at that point, I was working with WP eCommerce by Dan Millward and Jeff Ward.
Yeah, I remember them.
I think Dan moved into gaming, I think it is. I'm not sure what happened to Jeff. He was a really great developer.
Yeah, I remember Dan. Like, I used to hang, like, we were in, like, a couple of private Facebook groups together. I hadn't heard his name in so long, but yeah, I remember when, because they tried to get it back up and going for a little bit, you know, and then he moved on to something else.
Yeah, gaming.
So My first real introduction to WooCommerce was building a digital marketplace for a record label that I was a part of. And so all digital, all downloads. And that was a benefit of WooCommerce that most other e-commerce platforms didn't have at the time, was the ability to create a digital marketplace really easily. And so we did that for every artist that was on our record label. We had a website where you could buy all of the music we had. And, you know, that was 2012 that we started the project for that. And that was built on the white light theme from Woo. And, you know, just very, very early days of WooCommerce. And last month we had Becca Rice on, and we were talking about the Wild West of WooCommerce development. And back then there was a board where you could go and choose plugins you wanted to develop. And that's how all of the plugin development that became the marketplace started, was with a board of ideas that people claimed things on. And so it's really kind of interesting, you know, to see where we are today, and, you know, probably more importantly for this conversation, to see that WooCommerce itself is inspiring some of the things that other people are doing, yourself included. So why don't we talk just a little bit about where... So first of all, you've done a large update to your plugin, right? And that's the LSX Tour Operator plugin. And you've been using some really, really new cutting edge features in WordPress. But first, let's talk about the inspiration that you drew from WooCommerce as you started this process of rebuilding your plugin.
So I'd say it all started with the block theme that we developed last year. We were working with Frank Klein from WP Development Courses. He was mentoring our team on block development practices, best practices, things like that. What an amazing man. He has a wealth of knowledge. I swear he lives on the GitHub issues for WordPress and Gutenberg. You mentioned something and he's like, oh, well, and he goes and digs up a ticket that he was the one who either started or facilitated a bunch of information towards. My company is a Woo Expert company, we wanted our theme to be deeply integrated with Woo Blocks. That was a bit of a nightmare last year, and still somewhat of a challenge this year. But in the past 6 months, I must say it's gotten better, exponentially better. So we decided to add support for a lot of the block theme. The blocks that were beta blocks. Because I didn't really like the original blocks, to be honest, the product blocks that they had. They had a number of separate blocks that they then replaced with the product collection block. And the way they did that was really impressive for me. It's basically like a container, and then recently you would, when you want to add a product collection, it gives you a number of templates, like 5 specific templates and then one general kind of default one. And that really stuck in my head. Then another one of the blocks, which is still beta, product collection came out of beta recently, is the gallery beta. And that one's so much better than the old gallery block. And I have another e-commerce site back in South Africa. It's a side project of mine. And I build that using my company's open source theme. And it's like a test ground for all of what we're doing. So when something comes out, I will test everything possible. Like I'll try this config and that config and that config. and figure out what doesn't work. So then I write up GitHub issues for my teammates, and then they will add support. Either it's new support for a new WordPress release, and I must say that 6.3, 6.4, 6.5, and 6.6 releases, they just bounce the functionality and capabilities radically. And then when I was at WordCamp Europe recently, I was demoing what we're doing with the Woo Blocks to Bo, the CEO of WooCommerce, and he and Pi were really excited about this. They loved what we were doing because we've got full compatibility for all their blocks. And then we started on this venture of redeveloping our classic PHP-based tour operator plugin, which I was quite honestly scared of doing. When we started building that plugin, it's also an open source plugin, and it was built to work with our classic theme. And the reason it never really got adopted was because it only worked with that one theme. It was too much to actually get it to work with many themes, because we would have needed to write so much code to add compatibility. Now with block themes and blocks, this opens a whole lot of potential. We haven't done the testing with other themes yet, but I imagine that things are going to work pretty or better than ever they ever did in the past. So we've been looking at just to unpack a little bit more about the tour operator plugin, is it's got three core post types with four or five taxonomies. So you can imagine those are quite a number of templates. So these templates, I needed to map out the block-based templates, and they can't all just run off a central all archives template. They each need their own one because they have a host of custom fields. So what I'm working with my developer on is how we can approach this in a similar way to the product collection block, where we'll come up with hopefully one query loop type of block for all the post types, but realistically we'll probably need to do a few for each of the main post types that we're still experimenting with. Another thing that I've got earmarked is the pattern assembler within WooCommerce for customizing the design. I've been testing. It's not in the main release yet, from what I understand. I think it's in a future release. It's only in the beta versions. But I imagine if I had 8 pairs of fonts for a tour operator site, and the ability to then define a site logo and site icon and all of that sort of thing through a similar interface, that would radically reduce the time that we need to build sites. What we have done with quite a lot of success so far is migrated the many custom fields. So just to give you an idea, a single tour will have a couple of the main fields, like it's got its normal WordPress fields, title, excerpt, body, but then we've also got a subheading. There's a featured image, which is standard, but then we also have like a hero image that could be a wide image that isn't very tall or high. And then a host of values like price and day-by-day itineraries are repeatable groups of fields. So day one or day one to day three will then have a number of fields. We solved those in the past using CMB2, which is a good framework. It worked well for us. Have you guys got experience?
That's old. I've used it before. It's been around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like I saw it like almost 10 years ago.
So we can bypass a lot of that. We need it for some of the things that we want to achieve. But with the block bindings API, we're able to hook into the original slugs that we'd created for the custom fields. And one of the things that we've developed for our tour operator plugin is an integration with a data partner. So they're called where2.com, and they have two types of customers, accommodation providers and tour operators. The accommodation providers pump in their accommodation information, like descriptions, rooms, all of that sort of thing. And then tour operators, when they create digital itineraries, they would say, I start in this city and I go to that city and I go to this region. And then they create a really rich media itinerary. But now to display that on a website, you could just embed it with an iframe, but that's not great. So we built an integration to their REST API that literally connects to every single data point they have. For destinations,
you cache that.
Well, we actually import it, and we've set up triggers that it'll poll a specified cron job to check at certain times. Is there a change? Pull it in. We've got rules that we can set up where if the WordPress site has been changed, then it won't change. It won't import and overwrite. Or maybe you do want it to. There are a host of ways we can configure it. Nonetheless, the where to importer.
You happy with that?
Yeah, it's working really well.
I'm a big fan of consuming APIs now. Like, I'm just like, I think that's like way better than a lot of stuff that we had to do early on. Like you said, iframes, or like, I feel like that's like a nice change of like the development landscape in the last 10 years, as people are just like, nah, let me just do an API for this. And then they just let you pull the data and then you get it yourself.
So much better.
Yeah, right?
It does become somewhat unwieldy because you imagine that you have 500 accommodation listings attached to 50 tours or 100 tours, and all of the images attached to that. And then the people who load the accommodation data, they don't necessarily know that images need to be resized and whatnot. So we, over the years, had to develop methods to resize images on import, scale things. And with the day-by-day itineraries, there aren't actually images attached to an individual day. So we managed to create a way for it to automatically assign a random image to the day, for example, and that would be an image from the accommodation listing that's attached to that day.
Yeah, exactly.
Avalara wants to make sure that your projects go smooth, and part of that includes doing it right with their API. Their resources cover it all to help your clients manage sales and use, excise, GST, VAT, and other tax types across the US and abroad. You'll find it all on their site, and you'll be learning more on how they can help you during their sponsorship of WooDev Chat. Want to learn more? Just go to developer.avalara.com.
One of the things that we've done to interlink the different post types is to use a version of Post to Post by Scribu. I don't know how to pronounce that, but
I remember that. Yep.
Oh my god, yeah, he's the OG. He's the OG WPCLI developer too, right?
He discontinued development on that plugin, but that's not an issue because we've modified it and brought it into our system. And
it wasn't a lot of code, if I remember correctly. It was easy to, like, if you wanted to just like pull it into your own code base, it wasn't like mm-hmm. a huge, yeah. It was one of those like small plugins that do a lot, that can like do a lot of lifting, but like code wise,
it's really impressive.
But it was it wasn't like, oh, like this is like so big that there's no way we can like bring this into our own code base. Like it was like simple. So it was like, it was a good, it's easy for other developers to just look at what he did and bring it in.
I think context is important here for people who aren't familiar.
Yeah.
So what the post-to-post plugin did was it allowed you to create many-to-many relationships between posts. And, you know, as we know, or you may not know if you're listening to this, posts are everything in WordPress, pretty much. So pages are posts. Posts are posts.
It's like the core data type of WordPress.
WooCommerce orders are post types.
Yeah, everything's a post type, which is like why the scaling issue that we basically were like beating the dead horse of like the high performance order tables. But
yeah, now that high performance order storage exists, it's not quite a post type anymore for orders, which is a good thing, right?
I was thinking about that too, because you were describing your data model earlier and I was like, oh, I wonder how like you were saying, like, I mean, you'll have issues like scale with anything with WordPress. Like you were talking about like 500 accommodations and 80 tours and, you know, that can have an impact as well on performance.
With the importer, it does in time. So you can imagine the amount of images that get imported into the database for each listing and all of that. So that's something where we've learned how to manage the larger sites. Most smaller sites, it's not an issue. On the larger sites, we manage those on a case-by-case basis. But yeah, the post-to-post really helped us create the relationships. So for example, if you import a tour, you'll have those accommodation items connected. You'll also connect destinations. Destinations are hierarchical, like pages are hierarchical, where you've got a top level and a sub level. So a destination is two. The top level is a country and the sub level is a region. And those have different templates. So if you were on a country, you don't display accommodation, but you do display featured tours. Tours move through a country. They also move through a region. But accommodation would only display it on a region template, for example. So, yeah, what's one of the next things that we've got planned is obviously with all of this kind of data, searching for the information for the end user is a critical. And we've used Facet WP for a long time and sometimes Search WP, although I'm not sure that helps the performance very much. It does sometimes help having a search engine. But Facet WP is a great plugin for our needs. So we built like a little integration to the classic plugin. Now they have a block. It's just really for short codes. It's not really a true block. And we do some styling around that. Ideally, what I want to be doing with in the future, and it's on our roadmap, is something like WooFilters, where you've got your active filters, your price slider, filter by post type, filter by taxonomy, filter by featured. Something that we have that filtering on archives being your top level or category, top level for a post type being all tours or a category archive. And those filters can be relevant to that post type or that category. But then what happens when you search globally? Because a lot of people want to search the site globally. So then we've come up with a solution using Facet WP where one of the filters will be content type. So say that user does a search in the header for Cape Town, where I'm from, and it comes up with blog posts, pages, destinations, tours, accommodation, reviews, special offers, and maybe a team member's even attached mentions Cape Town. So then that filtering allows you to filter by content type. So that's something we haven't started with that yet, but I mapped everything out for it today, actually, while I was chatting about things with my developer. The checkout block is something I want to start pulling apart as like an inquiry, because I would like customers in the future, or not customers, but users of the plugin in the future, not to have to depend on a form plugin. And I was thinking that if we could do something like a checkout block, but an inquiry block, where I drop it into either a section on the page or a mode or something like that, that would be really great to post that information to a post type, like orders, but it would be inquiries. And if you think about the block bindings API, if you've got a single tour, we've managed to get the vast majority of fields to output properly. One thing I'm not sure how my developer is going to solve, but he has a plan, is, as I mentioned, that repeatable field. We have repeatable fields for gallery images as well. So if you add an image, you need to add alt information, alt tags, you need to add maybe a caption, or you add a host of info. So that part, that's on the roadmap, but we're very happy with the first part of the rebuild. A lot of it was done via the site editor, and I did that with the help of my developer. Then once I designed all the layouts, he would help me add some of the block bindings code to the plugin. Then I'd work with it a little bit. I'd do some designs. He'd take my block templates. He'd put them into the plugin. And then I'd do some more and back and forth like that. So it's been a really fun journey and amazing to push the limits of the site editor.
Yeah, because that's all relatively new too.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you feel it's stable enough? Like, you worry like that they'll... Because one of the things that with the Gutenberg experiment is that things have not been like always that stable, you know?
So one of the things that I'm a little bit worried about now, we've looked into it, and again, my Warwick has a plan for that. But that is the change of the theme to theme.json 3, where there are now defined spacing values that are within the theme.json, and or namespaces, I'm not sure what the correct terminology is, and also for font sizes, or font names, should I say. The sizes you can decide, because when we started last year, I was in discussion with Carolina Nymark, who had done an audit of 100 block themes. And she had taken the average of different naming for both spacing and for font sizes. So they've changed a few things from what the average in the community was. And that is going to probably cause havoc, because then those changes, either we're going to do a find and replace in the database, or I'm interested to see how we do that. And I just redeveloped my company website, so I spend a lot of time setting font sizes and setting spacing and using our own theme.json values. So I imagine that's going to take some time to refactor.
So it's my understanding that it only uses the new defaults if there's nothing set in the theme already. So It shouldn't override anything.
No, it won't. But I'm somebody who likes to do things the WordPress way. And I would like future sites that we develop to use the new naming space, namespaces. And I think rather following what the standards are than trying to do your own thing is a better approach. And it's becoming much easier to do that with theming, with block themes now. Before it was the Wild West with themes. I mean, classic themes, they'd develop their own options frameworks, and
right,
that was a nightmare. So I want to steer clear of that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think we're finally getting out of the world where the theme could be a kitchen sink theme, right? Where it included a whole bunch of functionality that wasn't in any way related to anything it needed to be. And so I think we're finally moving away from that with block themes. And hopefully we'll get away from the world where, you know, people had this necessity to package 482 plugins with their theme. Just to make it look like it had more functionality than it did. Because that's been a horrible practice the whole time. And that's what I call a kitchen sink theme, right? It's everything and the kitchen sink.
Indeed.
Those are really, really horrible practices to just have a theme do more than theme, right? That's plugin territory and always should have been. But we ended up building themes that did way more than just the visual theming of a site. And so I think this starts to refocus themes as being themes and not theme plus functionality. Patterns are a theme related thing, right? And the ability to set patterns in your theme JSON for your theme and share patterns that you've created in the pattern library is huge, right? That gives us new design capability. It doesn't relegate us to only being able to use the things that are available inside, you know, the available blocks. We now have, you know, these groupings of patterns that are also available. And, you know, it looks like in your theme, you know, you have a number of patterns, you know, they actually look really great, right? And you have all of these available to make sure that people have all the building blocks they need, plus all of these design templates to start from as they're building.
Yeah, the patterns were an interesting journey for us. When we started, we didn't know what to do, to be quite honest. Now we have a much better concept of how we could use patterns and what we need to use them for. So the patterns that are in our theme on WordPress.org are quite literally following what a lot of people in last year were doing. Frost WP, for example, was our inspiration. So then we made some changes to our color scheme, and the patterns aren't looking great at the moment. So I'm busy working on some pattern changes for next week's release. And we're going to be sorting out colors and that sort of thing. It's as we were talking about earlier, the learning dopamine hit. It was a bit of a light bulb moment when I started creating some patterns for our own company website in the most recent rebuild. And now I know what full page patterns I want to create. And those full page patterns are going to be made up of useful smaller patterns, not just random team patterns and random testimonial patterns and things like that. I know what I want, and now I just need to finish building them.
Well, and I think the other really cool thing I saw that you've done is you've actually released a Figma design system document that fits alongside your plugin and its design system in general. You have a style guide, but you've made extensive use of Figma variables. And I think that's huge because, you know, I've been digging further and further into Figma lately. I had a baseline knowledge, but I'm really digging into components and how creating components with variants works, and, you know, being able to build a library of interactive things that you can build your prototypes with. And the power is just so deep in what Figma can do. So seeing that you've built a toolkit that's built very similarly to the way that I'm trying to do the work that I do right now in Figma is pretty cool.
That was an interesting journey as well, because we started the Figma file last year, and we created three separate files, a style guide file, a WordPress file, and a WooCommerce file, because we thought that was a good idea to separate them. It would be if you were in a large organization doing a large design system for IBM or something like that, or Uber. A lot of them do these separate files, and that's where I took some of my inspiration from. But then this year we decided, when we did a radical upgrade on the design system, to merge everything into a single file. And we started with the LSX design theme, and we called it the LSX design system. And there we created two sections within it, major sections, other than the style guide and the cover. And that was for the WordPress pages and elements. And we broke those down by components and then blocks and then patterns and template parts and full page layouts and templates. And then we did a WooCommerce section in a similar structure. And then recently, after WordCamp Europe, as I mentioned, they really liked what we were doing. So I got the idea to showcase what we're doing with WooCommerce in a prototype. And my teammate Zared has done the most incredible prototype. The Woo prototype actually allows you to add to cart. And you can add up to four products to your mini cart. You can view the mini cart. You can empty the mini cart. You can search. It's insane. And we really pushed the limits of variables. And last year, none of that was actually possible, because what we were researching was the lead designer, forget his name right now, the lead designer from GitHub, was working on design tokens. And it was a separate system, and I stumbled upon it through the WordPress VIP.com website and their blog, where they were doing stuff in Figma and then exporting to theme.json. And pretty much populating the theme.json with the colors and fonts and values that you would need, or that you were working on in Figma. That was really powerful. But now this year, Figma's next leveled it. And when we started on the LSX tour operator design system, we put so much work into the variables and the naming conventions and all of that, we forked the file, the LSX design file, and we came up with that as like a basis for the tour operator plugin, came up with new colors because it has a different color scheme. We've gone for more of a Safari color scheme. And then we left the Woo prototype in there while we were generating the tour operator prototype. We could only start that, obviously, once we'd finished all the templates for tour operator. And it's been an interesting revelation, because the WooCommerce prototype was very variable, very much variable heavy and quite technical and interactive, Whereas the tour operator one is more of a clickable prototype. There's less that you can do with it. Like, we don't add anything to a cart. We also don't really need to test doing, like, filling in a checkout form or something like that. So that sort of thing is unnecessary. And we decided to focus on creating a very clear prototype design that will guide us for the coming months of our development on the Tour Operator plugin. So that's, I've got to say, been very rewarding and satisfying. My teammate Zared has, in the space of 4 months, gone from zero Figma knowledge to advanced Figma design. He wasn't even a designer before.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Now I want to be an advanced Figma person. I've literally...
Right?
I want to too, but...
like, all I've had is Figma stuff shared to me, and then I just look at it a bit, and it's like, that's the extent of my, like, interactions with Figma. It's, like, I'm kind of hyped up just hearing you talk about it.
It's amazing. And their videos on the YouTube channel, their own videos, are incredible. They all come with Figma files, workspace files. You can learn so much. And unfortunately, they made, like, a radical interface change this week. I think it was this week. I opened it up on Monday, I think it was, and I was like, what's happening? Where is everything? my teammate, the same thing. We needed to get stuff done. And the two of us were faffing, trying to figure out, where's this and where's that? Now we've got it. But it was the most radical interface change I've seen in an application in ages.
Yeah, they announced all of that at Config, that they were going to be changing the UI considerably. And just to bring this full circle to where we started today with talking about history, I have known Sho Kuamoto, who is the VP of product at Figma. And I've known him for a very long time. He was the senior director of engineering at Adobe for the tools portion of Flex. And was very responsible for the creation of Flash Catalyst, which was a design tool for the Flex framework. And so he's been at Figma now for 9 years. And so a lot of the beauty of what Figma is came out of learnings that happened in the Flash world. And so, very, very cool stuff. And we are now, seeing the benefit of all of that that history. And so, if you are interested in any way in learning a little bit about that history, there was a session during Config, which is Figma's conference, for those of you who are listening who don't know, about the impact of Flash on Figma and in general on the world. And so if you want to see kind of where all of this stuff that we're doing now came from, back in the final days of Flash, we were innovating very quickly. And all of those innovations, JavaScript has finally caught up to. So there's been a very large gap in time that the things that we used to do in Flash have not been possible. And, or at least not as easy to do by any means. And so now we've gotten to a point where it's all come full circle. And tools like Figma exist because of that history. So really, really cool stuff. So I think, that's a really good spot to kind of start to wrap up here today. It's been really great getting to know some of your process here, and I'm sure we could probably talk for another hour or two, but I think that Bob would get in trouble.
We never got to the questions I had from pre-show, so definitely. So
I think that Bob might get in trouble if we keep him much longer. So I'm trying to not hashtag bug Bob too much. I'm still trying. It's gonna happen. So if you're listening to this and you you want to help me make Bob smile, just post something with hashtag bug Bob and let's see if we can get a whole bunch of things in his inbox. Go ahead and tag him in it too, at BobWP, and let's have some fun with that. But it's really a remarkable thing that you've built so much on the new functionality that's in the block editor. You know, the block bindings API is very new. A lot of these things are cutting edge, and it's really cool to see some of that happening. And so I think it would be great to have another conversation at some point in the future. But before we do that, let's go ahead and wrap today up. So, Ash, where do people go to find you on this collection of tubes we call the internet?
So our company website would be a good place. We've got lightspeedwp.agency. That's for more agency related things, or our product website, which is lsx.design. On the web, generally our social profiles are lightspeedwp. So if you look at GitHub, YouTube, Twitter, those three are all LightspeedWP. And Facebook and Instagram are LightspeedWP Dev.
Very cool. And you know, before we close up here, I just generally ask Carl if he has a final question.
We got to save Bob today. We got to save Bob.
Okay.
I was just excited by the Figma stuff. I'm like,
it's really neat.
I was just really excited. Like, I lit up at that because I was just like, for me, I think, and probably for a lot of developers and even yourself before you got into it, like Figma for me is like, it's a designer tool. You do mockups with it and that's about it.
Well, I've posted two blog posts. Yesterday, I posted a blog post on the announcing the new LSX Tour Operator design system and our process and a number of things just to explain more about how we got to the endpoint. And then today, I posted a blog post kind of in preparation for this about our journey from classic to cutting edge. That's what I called it.
Bob will link those in the show notes.
Exactly. So there's a lot more information there on exactly what you wanted to know.
Very cool. Yeah, I'm sure you know that there will be a lot of people that have interest in the other things that you've done here. Those blog posts are great resources. That's part of what I was going through while I was asking questions here. And yeah, we will link some other things to the show notes for this show that we've talked about, things like Facet WP and, you know, that new store designer in WooCommerce and some of the other stuff. But yeah, I really appreciate the time you spent to talk with us about, you know, kind of your process here. These are always really interesting conversations. And I'm glad that we were able to dig deep on some of the things. Let's talk again, you know, in the future here. We'll work out when, and we'll have you back to talk some more.
Well, thanks for letting me talk about my passions, and it was an absolute blast. You guys are very interesting, and I'm sure we could go on forever.
We could. Well, as always, if you have any ideas for what you'd like to hear here on the Woo Dev Chats, Carl and I and Mike and Marcel are all open to ideas, to hearing your feedback. So again, that's hashtag Bug Bob on every social media platform, just to let him know what you want to hear, or go to dothewoo.io and let us know there. And you know, we really appreciate the fact that you sit here and listen to Carl and I geek out with a guest every month. So thank you for being here. Ash, it's been great getting to know you. And we will talk soon.
Cheers.
Talk soon.
Hey, Bob WP here again. And as mentioned, yes, we would love to know what you want to hear on the next Woo Dev Chat, or perhaps you even want to be a guest. So reach out to us, and remember, it'd be great to have you leave your thoughts on today's show in the comments on the post. Lastly, I'd like to thank Avalara again for their support. Please check them out at avalara.com. Until the next time.